We will call the order, the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources today. It's Friday, February 24th, 2012. It is 1, well, it's a little bit after 1 right now, but colleagues, we have two things on our agenda today. We are going to have some invited testimony on the ODFW federal grant request, which has been before this committee before. When it got to the full committee, there was a little bit of, I won't say confusion, but a little bit of conflict about that, about the grant request. We thought it would be best to resolve it back here in the subcommittee. So we brought that back at our last meeting, went through the procedural stuff to bring that before us again. And then we'll have House Bill 4005B that we'll have a work session on as well. So with that, we will open up a work session on the ODFW federal grant request.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as you stated yesterday, you voted to bring the grant, reconsider the motion by which you sent the grant to the full committee. So the grant is back before you. I believe you wanted to get some testimony from interested parties, and I believe they're here in the audience.
Yes, I do. So I'd like to hear from the, let's see, do we have a representative from the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust here? Ms. Lambert, could you come forth and give us a little bit of an overview of what it is that you hope to do with this grant request? Mm-hmm. I think the committee is probably interested in hearing about any sideboards that there might be to this. And particularly, if you could address potential injury to neighboring property owners, junior water right holders, et cetera, I'd be interested in hearing about that.
Okay, thank you. Well, good afternoon, Chairman Edwards, Spire, and Jensen, and members of the committee. As was stated, my name is Kristen Lambert, and I'm the Director of Water Transactions for the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust, or a small nonprofit based in Klamath Falls. I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony today regarding our ODFW application for Section 6 funding. We're seeking these funds for the acquisition of half of the water rights for the Jaycox Ranch, which is located in the upper Klamath Basin, for the purpose of transferring those water rights to in-stream flow. This would restore 17 miles of critical habitat for endangered Lost River and short-nosed suckers, bull trout, as well as for native red band trout. The owner of the Jaycox Ranch, James Popson, is a fifth-generation rancher, and the Jaycox was homesteaded by his family. Mr. Popson has been working with our organization for the past 10 years to develop new grazing strategies on the ranch that will maintain high cattle stocking rates while reducing water use. As part of this effort, the water rights included in this transaction have been leased in stream through the Oregon Water Resources Department since 2004. Funding for the transitional lease has now been fully expended, and in order to maintain the flow in Seven Mile Creek, we must move forward with a permanent in-stream transfer. By implementing these new grazing strategies over the last decade, Mr. Popson has found that even with this portion of his water rights left in stream, he's able to run a high percentage of his irrigated herd size, and the weight gain and health of the cattle have actually improved in his estimation. He's entering into this transaction on a voluntary basis, because he believes he can continue to operate a productive ranch while providing additional water for fish and wildlife, as well as downstream agricultural water users. In many years, water supplies in the Klamath Basin are insufficient to meet all of the needs of agriculture, endangered species, and the downstream fishery in the Klamath River. This project will utilize federal funds in a voluntary partnership to provide improved water security for downstream needs, including fish, wildlife, and agriculture, as well as the Klamath Irrigation Project, who, as you know, their crops provide a valuable source of income for our local economy in the Klamath Basin. We understand the committee has requested further information about three issues: economic and species benefits, impacts to county tax rolls, and impacts to adjacent landowners. First, I'll address economic and species benefits. This section of Seven Mile Creek that's restored through this project has been completely dewatered for over 2 miles historically as a result of these diversions. Since flow was restored 8 years ago by the in-stream lease, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife monitoring of the creek has shown native red band trout spawning populations and age class diversity have substantially increased. The red band trout is an important recreational fish for our local economy. Additionally, monitoring has shown dramatic improvement in habitat and water quality in the rewatered stretch and all the way down to Upper Klamath Lake. These improvements benefit endangered bull trout and suckers, but as well several other sensitive species, including the Oregon spotted frog, yellow rails, and rare mollusks, all of which are target species under ODF&W's conservation strategy. Finally, once this water reaches the lake, it can continue to support our local economy by being reappropriated to other uses, including agriculture in the lower parts of the basin. With respect to county taxes, this project is not expected to result in any change in the county property taxes paid by the Jaycox Ranch. The Jaycox will remain in private ownership and continue to be operated as an active cattle ranch. The Jaycox is currently managed by Mr. Popson, his son, and one paid employee. No change in the number of the jobs on the ranch is anticipated, and none has occurred during the 8-year period of the in-stream lease. Finally, impacts to adjacent landowners. Our organization's mission is to serve conservation objectives through partnerships with private landowners. It's essential to our success that we do not adversely impact the operations of any landowners in the basin, and we do not take any action that we believe could injure another landowner, as we depend on these strong relationships with producers. As part of the existing in-stream lease, the Oregon Water Resources Department reviewed this transaction to ensure no injury or enlargement occurred to adjacent landowners. Our organization provided public notice of its lease application in 2004 and again when the lease was renewed in 2008. During that notice period, only one comment was received, and that was from an adjacent landowner. KBRT, the Water Resources Department, and that landowner worked jointly to a solution that addressed his concerns, and the lease has continued to operate under the resulting signed agreement. This agreement provided some additional extra water into the ditch to help mitigate that landowner's concerns. KBRT remains committed to this type of compromise should the full transfer move forward if we receive the Section 6 funding. During the 8-year period of the in-stream lease, no finding of injury has occurred by the Oregon Water Resources Department. Additionally, the Water Resources Department is charged with the responsibility of reviewing the proposed transfer to ensure that no injury will occur prior to its completion. Should the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service funding be received, KBRT will apply to the department to make permanent the terms of the existing lease. This will initiate a Water Resources Department transfer review process, which includes extensive opportunity for public input, contest, and requires the department to once again complete a full review of the transaction to ensure that no injury occurs to any downstream water users. The Water Resources Department, as the appropriator of water rights for the state, will be charged with validating and protecting all of the water rights included in this transaction, as well as the neighbors. The committee's vote today will not circumvent this process in any way. KBRT greatly appreciates the opportunity to provide the subcommittee with these comments, and we appreciate your careful consideration of this project, which we firmly believe is a win-win for agriculture, conservation, and the economy of our basin. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Go ahead, Sir Thompson.
Thanks, Co-Chair Edwards. Thank you. How do you come up with the amount that water right is worth?
There is a water rights certificate, which garners the amount of what's often referred to as the paper right in colloquial terms. When we go to the transfer process, what we are able to apply for is the amount of wet water that was traditionally delivered to that landowner. So in the case of Seven Mile Creek, the water rights for the primary diversion that's in question here today often exceed the natural flow of the creek. And so the volume of water that you're allowed to transfer in stream relates to what the average flow of the creek actually is, not the amount of water that shows up on a paper certificate. So our organization makes our best effort to review flow records for the creek and to identify the appropriate amount of water. That was done for the in-stream lease, and we work together with the department to ensure that the amount of water protected is appropriate to what was traditionally diverted for irrigation. Does that answer your question?
Follow-up?
Well, thank you. Follow-up. Not exactly. How did you determine how much you will pay him for his giving up his water?
I thought you were talking about the volume.
I'm talking about the dollars.
We had an independent appraisal done of the water rights. Initially, we commissioned an appraisal for the basin as a whole, which provided a range of values that would be appropriate. And then we had a specific appraisal completed for the water rights in question.
So, follow up. Yep. So that's out there, general information that anybody can figure out what their water's worth in any basin around the state?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow up on that?
Yeah.
How much does that cost me if I'm a landowner and want to do that?
Depends on the appraiser you hire would be the answer. I've seen bids ranging from around $2,000 to $15,000 for a water right appraisal, depending on the complexity, the number of water rights involved, and how robust the water market is in a particular area. So if there's a lot of water transactions like you see in the Deschutes, it's much easier to complete an appraisal.
I'm assuming that this is a rather follow-up.
Of course.
This is a rather complex issue in the Klamath Basin, and therefore is probably a tad greater than the $2,000 you mentioned.
Correct. I would have to look at our receipts.
Well,
but
I'm not asking for that.
Okay.
Looking for ballpark. So.
Yeah, it actually was towards the lower end of that range, not 2,000, but there's only three water right certificates and one supplemental water right involved in the transaction, whereas some have 15 to 20 certificates involved.
Okay. Yep. Senator Thompson.
Co-chair, thank you. In doing some research after this kind of got brought back to us, if I'm not mistaken, the junior water right person lives downstream in this irrigation canal or creek or whatever it is. And I was told that this user that's selling his water right is upstream, and they've kind of worked out of agreement between neighbors throughout the years, because it almost takes all of his water to get the junior water rights water down to him sometimes. And so this guy will use it for a period of time and then worked out a deal where to get the junior right water neighbor down the stream, they got to use the primary water holder to get that flow down there. When you take water, put it back in the stream, does it go before the diversion, or does it go after it goes past the junior water right and back into a stream? How is this particular, how does
right.
that work?
A water right certificate has a point of diversion, which is the legal point at which water needs to be made available to a landowner or other user of the water. So in this case, the point of diversion is located in Seven Mile Creek. It's the individual landowner's responsibility to convey that water from the point of diversion to their property. So in this case, yes, two landowners have shared a ditch from the point of diversion to their property, and the in-stream flow will be created at the point of diversion, not at where the landowner's property is reached. So part of the stipulated agreement that I referred to that we reached with the adjacent landowner and the Water Resources Department was to leave an extra amount of water in the ditch to help mitigate for that concern. That, as my understanding, isn't required under the terms of how water is distributed, because once again, the water just needs to be made available to the landowner at his point of diversion. But that process was in order to compromise and facilitate things for the adjacent landowner.
So you had to put a little bit more in there than you originally started with.
Mm-hmm.
Did that property owner that you're giving this money to get less money because you put less?
You can contract in any way you want. It's a private transaction that'll take place there. Generally, what is done is it's known that a little bit of the amount of water will be reduced for things like that, for sub-irrigation along the creek channel, where even though the landowner isn't trying to irrigate, the plants along the channel will still receive water, and that'll be consumptively used. So how our organization handles that is we typically have sort of a graded schedule where there's a little bit of room where the landowner still receives the full payment. If the in-stream transfer is substantially below what we believe it will be, then the payment rate is reduced, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I think that's all the questions that the panel has of you. Hang around.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
In case we have more. And next, I'd like to call up somebody from the Water Resources Department. So whoever you would designate it to be the expert.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Tom Paul, Oregon Water Resources Department.
Please, go ahead. You're not here. So you're here to answer questions. So go ahead. Read my mind.
Ask
if you were really astute.
Ask the question, answer it, man.
If you were really astute, you would know exactly what I'm thinking right now. Could you speak to the process? We're particularly concerned. There are legislators that are concerned about the process. If an adjacent property owner, junior water right holder, feels as though they're being injured in this process, what are their rights? And could you tell us a little bit about the process?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Once we receive a water right transfer application, we review that to make sure it's complete. We also review that transfer to see if the proposed change would cause injury or enlargement, enlarging the water rights so it serves more than what's authorized. The application is noticed, and there's an opportunity for individuals to protest or challenge the transfer. We do not approve a transfer if we determine that injury will result.
And then have you reviewed this particular project under its existing terms as it's been carried forward for the last 8 years or 10 years, however long that the current program has been going? Have you reviewed that and found there to be no injury?
Mr. Co-Chair, currently water is being protected in-stream under what is referred to as an in-stream lease, and we also process in-stream leases. So once that application was submitted, we reviewed it again for injury. We have issued the lease, and our water master has enforced the provisions. There have been no allegations of injury since the lease was approved.
And then, just to clarify, so everybody's crystal clear, that process would happen again if this grant application were approved, if the grant were awarded, and Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust were able to proceed with the transaction. Again, the Water Resources Department would be involved in reviewing the transfer of rights application.
Mr. Co-Chair, yes. If a water right transfer application is received for this project, we would conduct a new injury review, go through the process as laid out in statute, and proceed accordingly.
And if somebody claims injury, then there's a process. And if it comes down to somebody claiming injury, and I'm not saying that KBRT would say this, but what if KBRT says, we don't think there's injury here, and the landowner that wants to leave their water in stream says, I don't think there's injury, but this other guy thinks there's injury, how does that get processed?
Mr. Co-Chair, the Water Resource Department is the entity charged with determining whether or not there is injury and making a finding of no injury so that we can approve a transfer. If we make a determination of no injury and subsequently issue an order proposing to approve, there's an opportunity for others then to file a formal protest if they want to allege injury or feel that they are being injured by the proposed transfer. That could subsequently end up in a contested case hearing, and the facts would be reviewed by an administrative law judge.
Okay. That suffices my questions around that particular area, but Representative McClain.
Could you help me understand what the scope the determination as to whether injury occurred is the injury determination isolated to environmental factors? Is it isolated to traditional use, ag, for an example? What about economic? And I know you're making the determination, but what is it that you're determining?
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative, the injury determination, I apologize for not stating this, the statute says that we will determine injury to existing water rights. So it is not a public interest review. It's not an environmental review. It is specifically injury towards other water rights in the system.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Co-Chair, do those exact statutes pertain to split use? When you look at a split use in determining, tied into Senator Rep. McClain's question?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Thompson, this what we're talking about is not a split season lease.
Right.
This is a transfer.
Right. I was just wondering if those are the same.
I feel like I'm back in policy committee here for a second. Deja vu.
We have administrative rules that direct how we process split season leases, and we do process leases to determine injury and enlargement.
But different statutes. Germaneness here, did we
right.
say?
I just want to see how consistent it was.
Are there any other?
And I'm satisfied. It's consistent.
Are there other questions for the department?
No,
questions? Okay. Thank you for being available to answer our questions. Committee, I would like to move this back to the full committee, to the full Ways and Means Committee, but I don't want to do that until we've had the opportunity to have some discussion here. And if there are any other questions before we move into a vote, I mean, we could take a motion and then
do the motion
and then we'll discuss.
I just
it.
Have a question before
yeah.
we do that.
Coach,
we talked a little bit sidebar discussion at the last meeting that the people who were basically opposed to this or had concerns or heartburn would be able to present us that that information. That's why so far I've heard from the proponents of the request and from the agency where the request comes, and both of them are supportive of this. And am I right in assuming that nobody has showed up to tell us why this is a bad idea?
Well, let's just put it out there and we'll ask. Nobody has approached me about wanting to testify, but is there anybody in the room that would like to testify and say why they think that this is a bad idea? We want to air it out now before we send it to Ways and Means. I don't see anybody. I haven't been approached, but I think it's an appropriate question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to reiterate, LFO's recommendation is to approve the federal grant request to submit the five grants to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The chair would entertain a motion to do
so.
So
moved.
Thank you. Co-Chair Jensen has moved the LFO recommendation as reiterated by our competent staff, and so we will now move into discussion of the motion. While you guys were out, there was a motion to move the grant request forward with a due pass.
With the original staff recommendation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Co-Chair Jensen.
Mr. Chair, I'd just be comfortable in including on here for the co-chair's benefit that our initial review of this was confirmed by further review than we had today. But that's
Sometimes you just got to slow the process down a little bit to make sure that the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and I think the process is working. So with that, are there any...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I appreciate the ability to bring this back and have the discussion. I know that sometimes it's beginning to think that, you know, maybe we aren't representative as a committee when we're sending things out and they're, you know, getting voted down or held over. And I appreciate the chance to be able to look back at this and see if we missed something, if there's maybe something we did wrong. And I'm glad to see that you have looked thoroughly into this and had a lot of discussions with people. And with that, I support it.
And with that, I'll ask, are there any objections to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say that I'll vote yes here in the subcommittee, again, based upon your good work and Senator Thompson's to vet it out. There are a few other interest holders in my district that I had, just because of this short session and days, I have not talked to specifically that I have yet to. So while I support it here in the subcommittee to go to the full, I do want to put on the record that if I learn some new information, I may change my vote. But one thing's for sure, in the compressed short session, it was sure nice to have somebody be willing to stop the train, get good information, and help us make good decisions. And I know that's happened periodically just in my experience. It was nice to see that, so thank you for that.
You bet. Are there any other comments? Okay, no objections. Seeing no objections, so moved.
Mr. Chair, the current chair is yourself, Senator Edwards. Would you like to stay and keep it that way?
Oh, yeah, I'll carry it.
And going back, this doesn't need a carrier, does it?
Senator Edwards will carry it.
He didn't.
We're going to close the work session on the ODF&W federal grant request. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 4005B.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4005B is a bill that creates and establishes a tax, an income tax credit for compensation of livestock loss due to a wolf depredation. You have before you an amendment that's been approved by the three co-chairs for consideration. The current bill, as in the form it came out of the House Revenue Committee, had a $15,000 annual limit on these tax credits. This amendment, the dash B5, would increase that to $37,500 in any one year. There is a minimal fiscal impact, and while we don't have a fiscal impact yet, or a revenue impact yet for from the revenue staff, but we do have on the original B version as what amounts to a minimal revenue impact of looks like about $10,000, but that could go up because the cap would go up, but I would assume that the maximum revenue impact in any one year would have to be about $75,000. That's it. So you do have the B5 amendment in front of you.
Thank you. So we have the amendments in front of us. The amendments need to be adopted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I take a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Co-Chair Jensen.
Did you have a recommendation?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, LFO is recommending adoption of the amendment as approved by the co-chairs and moving the bill to the full committee.
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the amendments to House Bill 4005B as have been read to us, House Bill, the amendments are LC 89, dated 2/24/12, and it constitutes only a change in $15,000 to $37,500 in the original language of the bill.
Co-Chair Jensen moves the dash B5 amendments to House Bill 4005. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, are there any objections to adoption of the amendments? Note for the record the objection of Representative Bailey. And the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move House Bill 4005 as amended to the full Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Jensen has moved House Bill 4005 as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will keep my comments brief. I express my objection to this bill, and the Revenue Committee will not repeat many of those points here, other than to say, while we have been trying in our revenue process to get the revenue side of the House to stop making bad Ways and Means decisions, ironically, we now have Ways and Means now making bad revenue decisions. And I think this is a step backwards on our efforts to get our tax credit system under control and is duplicative of efforts that we already have. That's all I'll say.
Thank you, Representative Bailey. Representative Beyer.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes. I do have a question. And I know it's not on the revenue piece, but I guess my question would be, is the proof that is called for in this bill the same as the proof in the Wolf Compensation Program?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think there's a slight modification in it that I think the original program is actually with the Department of Agriculture as the keeper of the funds. But the basic idea, I believe both bills call for the agency, ODF&W, to be the one or a police officer or public safety officer. I would expect that the agency would write rules that anyone from either the agency or any other law enforcement public safety officer would be asked to, or required to have training. And I understand there is training available for these particular people, that this is a fairly common sort of thing now, and it's spread throughout the entirety of the northwestern states. So there's somewhat readily available training for that. But the agency itself has trained personnel. And one of the things about it in terms of, reduction of the fiscal impact of this, the agency is pretty much by the Wolf Plan already obligated to make determinations as to whether or not a kill is wolf related or not, sort of thing. So I think basically we're in the same place on this.
Thank you.
Does that suffice your question? Okay. Senator Brzozinski.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And this is really for staff to confirm. I'm looking at and read through the measure that has come down as the measure summary for HB 4005B, and it's where it says underneath what the bill does. It states, stipulates tax credit be reduced by any amount taxpayer has already received as compensation for kill of livestock, and I'm assuming that refers to the Wolf Compensation and Proactive Management Fund, and that there would be, quote-unquote, let's call it an offset for whatever is paid out of that fund versus what would be receivable under the tax credit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, that's my understanding as well. I don't think it would have to just be compensation from that fund if there were a private organization that compensates ranchers for a loss of livestock and they were to receive that compensation. I would assume that that would also offset this tax credit.
So it's broader?
I believe so.
All right. Thank you for putting that on the record.
Please. If I may, this was the intention as was when the bill was delivered to the Legislative Council office, that there be no double dipping in any way in relationship to this. The intention was to compensate for actual loss based on the fair market value of, you know, the animal that happened to be in question. And realizing there are a couple of things that could be taking place out there, I specifically asked that they're not, you know, that it be written in such a way that it didn't allow for, you know, that.
Right. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or discussion? Okay. Seeing none, are there any objections? Note for the record, Representative Bailey's objection. And seeing no others, the bill passes. On to full Ways and Means.
Carriers.
Carriers. Representative McClain?
I was thinking of Ways and Means, but he can't.
He'll be happy to.
McClain will carry it, and
I just do butterflies.
We need it. Well, this is going all the way on.
How about a senator?
On the Senate floor.
Okay.
Oh. Senator Thompson.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Representative McClain, I would appreciate his carrying it.
On the House floor?
The House. Well, no. I would appreciate carrying it the House floor. Mm-hmm. There are some variables that have come up very late that may be necessary to deal with in presentation.
Sure.
To the floor. And, so I makes appreciate sense. The, you know.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense.
I'd hate to have him get
I that. Defer to the smarter guy in the room, that's for sure.
But you're still on the hook for full.
On the hook.
Okay. We'll close the work session on House Bill 4005. Colleagues, this is our last meeting for this February session of this subcommittee. Thank you for serving. Thanks for your help. Thanks for the cooperative attitude that everybody's put forward. And yep.
Some questions have arisen on the second grant request. I was wondering if we could get those in this afternoon.
Nope.
No, just kidding.
We're adjourned.
Good work.
Bring that gavel down quick.